So nothing shocks me anymore. I mean, the rise of know-nothingism. But another thing that shocks me is, all right, how Rabbi Eli Akiva can quote this. There is a famous introduction of Rabbi Yehoram ben HaRambam that you find printed at the beginning of all the Ein Yaakov. We saw that here last spring, right. What I didn't know at that time, Rabbi ben HaRambam simply quotes this Gemara in Pesachim as an illustration of the fact that you don't have to take scientific theories that are presented in the Talmud seriously. If the scientific evidence today comes out and shows that the rabbis were incorrect in a matter of science, the rabbis are willing to accept new scientific evidence. Their theories are not infallible. And he makes this point several times in beautiful language as an introduction to description of the Agadic literature. I was told, I haven't seen this, but I was told that in Israel they've reprinted a translation of the Ein Yaakov, including a translation of the Rabbi Rabin Rambam's introduction, but this whole passage is censored out. It doesn't appear. So the tendency towards know-nothingism that we've experienced in the last 5 or 10 years, a drastic rush into ignorance, is just absolutely mind-boggling. All right. But, okay, so Rabbeinu Tam takes this very strange, non-scientific theory, resurrects it, and uses it to resolve a conflict between the text of the Gemara in Shabbat and the text of the Gemara in Pesachim. Okay. Now his student, Rabbi Eliezer Mimitz, disagrees with him. Let's take a look at my supplementary page 38. Do we have it? Mm-hmm. So in the right-hand column, about a quarter from the bottom, Be'ezehu ben hashmashot, do you have that? It says, Daf lamed dalet amud beis. Do we all have it?
Two-thirds of the way down.
Right. Do you see where it says, Daf lamed dalet amud beis? Do you have the right page, Mel?
Or the text.
Yeah. Do we have it? Everybody have it?
Yeah.
Be'ezehu ben hashmashot. What is Ben Hashemashot? Mishitishke hachama. Piresh Rabbi Eliezer b'mitz, b'sefer Yireim. Mishitishke hachama de Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Nechemia. Mishematchelet l'shkoach. When it begins to undertake the setting process. Mishenotema'at, when it tilts a little bit. Umakirin ha'olam sherotza likanes ba'ovei harakia. That it wants to enter into the thickness of the firmament. In other words, as we explained, the sun begins to redden even when it's above the horizon as much as 6 degrees. So there's a period of time when you can see that the light of the sun is changing. It really is eager to get into the firmament, and it changes its color to red. Dahainu ma'at kodem shkiyat hachama. V'lashon mishatishaka mashma hakdama. In other words, Rabbi Eliezer Mimitz says that this period is even before. Mishatishke hachama means even before the sun is set. It wants to set. It's eager to get into the firmament and crawl through the window, but it hasn't yet done it. V'ota hakdama nikret ben hashmashot. And that hakdama, that preceding portion, is what we call ben hashmashot. V'shiyora lo rabba tlata rivei mir lo rab Yosef trei titlei mir. V'hu kodem shkiyat hachama. This period of bein hashmashot, of twilight, is prior to the physical setting of the sun. Prior to the physical setting of the sun. Aval shkiyat hachama, the actual length of time that it takes the sun to set, mahalach, either dalet or hei milin, that depends upon your reading of the text, kodem seitu kochavim. from the time that the sun has actually physically set below the horizon until the end of this process, all of that is considered as legally night. In other words, this is a complete agreement with the Rabbi the Ibn Ezra. Okay? Shloshev Rebbe Mil Heim Tav Mevav Meyot Amma. That's Rokeach. That Rokeach was his student. V'raya miperek misham atameh amarav avarachana kamar lechadam bayim hayil ayom asar apasov melot ashachar v'yad nitzach hama arba mil mishkiyat hachama v'yad seita kochabim hem mil pirush mishkiyat hachama shematchilat lishkoa shenichneset ba'ovei harakia, from the time that the sun has begun to set, u'kishah hachama nichneset milamata, as the sun is entering the hole, the window of the heaven from below, shematchilat la'alot, it's starting to go up through the firmament, hakochavim nichnasin milamala, the stars begin to enter the firmament from above, umatchilim le'reid, gam rachama aliyata, when the sun has managed to complete its traversal of the firmament, sh'avra olvav shel rakia, gamru kochavim yiridatan, the stars have finished their descent. So according to Rabbi Eliezer Vimitz, he takes the Gemara's theory one step further. Not only does the sun go through the firmament, but the stars come down. They're not visible during the day because they're on the other side of the firmament. Remember, without Fechner's law, it's impossible to understand why we don't see stars during the day. We don't see stars during the day because of a very subtle reason, namely that our eye is sensitive to differences in the logarithm of the luminescence. If we be sensitive to absolute differences, then we should see a star during the day because it just provides more light than the background. So it's perfectly logical to ask why don't we see stars during the day, and Rabbi Eliezer Mimitz had a strange theory, namely the stars descend. But you see, now he has a different interpretation of the phrase Seita Kochavim. Seita Kochavim doesn't mean when the stars appear, but when the stars start to travel, they begin their descent from above. So according to Rabbi Eliezer Mimitz, night legally begins with sunset, okay, and ends, and if there is anything like Bein HaShemashot, it's when the sun is still above the horizon, 13 or 15 or however many minutes before the setting of the sun. And if you want to see the detailed explanation, I've also appended the entire selection from the Sefer Yerayim. It'll take us too long to actually read through it. Okay.
Such a ridiculous theory. I mean, it explains why the sun's light changes its aspect.
It's not a ridiculous theory, except that it doesn't coincide with any known scientific theory then or at any other time, but it does coincide with a religious view and represents an actual existing tradition. And that's why I want to bring in the Sefer Yetzirah.
Is there any other source than the statement of Beis Chaim?
Well, Rabbeinu Tam's position in Tosfot is explained by this.
It's explained, but it's not an explicit statement that the Chacham Yisrael won, even though the others were run by the others.
I think the only place where I see it is not explicitly stated that way is the Shita Mukbet. By the way, in addition to this brilliant reference to the Christian topography that Professor Pinas makes in this article, he also makes another point, which stupidly was never clear in my mind. The Sefer has nothing to do with what we're saying, but it's such a stunning point that it's worth making as an aside. Maybe we can discuss it in detail. You know, you have such a thing as 10 Sefirot, the Esar Sefirot. What does the word Sefira mean? Numeral. And the Sefer Yetzirah begins with the fact that there are 32 magical symbols, namely the 22 letters of the alphabet and the 10 numerals. Where do you have 10 numerals? What system of arithmetic uses 10 numerals?
Arabic.
Only the Arabic system, which is, of course, the Indian system. The Arabs refer to it as al-Hisab al-Hindi. And in Rabbi Sa'adia Gaon discusses the issue of the fact that you have exactly 10 numerals because the numbers repeat after you get past the digit and so on. So that therefore, just as you can make all words out of the 22 letters, you can make all numbers out of the numerals. Well, that dates the Sefer Yetzir. I mean, because we know that the Indian system of counting, the Arabic numeral system, only arrived with the Arab conquests around the 6th or the 7th century. So that's, I think, to my mind, it's something that's completely obvious once you say it, and then, of course, the word sphera became merged with the Greek sphere, so that this was then became connected with the Platonic theory of emanations and Plotinus and so on. So the Kabbalistic doctrines of the ten spherot sort of got a mix of all of this, but the original thing was numerology magic derived from the fact that you had the system of Arabic numerals. So, it's obviously correct once you've said it.
It
gives it away completely. Yeah. All right. Next stage in what's happened here. Let's turn to my page 43 of the supplementary material. This is now from a very famous book. This is the Torat Adam of the Ramban. My page 43. Uvekan hevia inyam lafaresh davar ne'alam midat rabim. Sharishonim lo hirchivu v'peusho. Now comes the time to explain something which most people don't understand, and the Rishonim never really went into it in detail. V'hu zman ha-tosefet hazeh, שמוסיפים ביום הכיפורים ובשבתות ביומים טובים מכל על הקודש. What is, when you're supposed to have an additional period of time, תוספת יום טוב, תוספת שבת, or להוסיף מהכל על הקודש, what period of time is this talking about? בוודאי קודם בין השמשות, it must be prior to the period of בין השמשות, the ha-tosefet asay, there's a specific asay, mitzvat asay, to add from the chol al kodesh, uvein hashmashot safek la'onesh karot imitav achayav vaday asham taloy. Okay, v'chayav adam taloy, asham taloy. In other words, this additional period of time that you're adding from the profane to the holy cannot coincide with the time of bein hashmashot. ובשני בין השמשות חייב חטאת שמנה. If you perform the melacha at the exact period of time, both Friday night and Saturday night, you definitely have to bring a full karban chatat, because either one or the other of those times you violated the Sabbath. Ela kodem bein hashmashot. So therefore, this tosefet from the chol al hakodesh must be before bein hashmashot.
Right, on the night before.
Right. V'shi'ur bein hashmashot, if ligu alei amorai v'per v'amem medlikin, there was a dispute as to when this extent of the bein hashmashot is, u'maskana mishitishka achama havi bein hashmashot ad seita kol chavein. The bein hashmashot is from shkiyat achama until seita kol chavein. V'im kein ha-tosefet hazeh kodem shkiyat achama. This tosefet must be before shkiyat achama. V'zeh davar gadol shel tehima. But this is impossible. Sh'teyei hachama zorechet kenegdo, that the sun is shining in your face, v'chayav v'inui v'asam asur b'mlacha. How could you possibly say when the sun is shining on your face that you're supposed to fast or not allowed to do melacha? U'tnan nami v'kulan beit hilel matirim im ha-shemesh, v'ata aminen atun v'lokim luchu b'shiura d'rabanan adika shimshav reishtik li'it lusharga, holaman dekim lei, af al pishin estalek mirosh ad-kalim, even though the sun is no longer visible over the trees, kol zman shelo shaka mutarim ba'achila. The sugya b'chula gemara calls man shahama zorechet mutar b'kol melacha. So long as the sun is shining, you're allowed to work. V'chem b'yitziyato li'achad seita kohavim laila gamol mutar b'kol melacha. V'yod hazman hazeh safek shel ben ashmashotu umahu hazman hazeh shahasato ato tarato sefet behizhiro alav ba'asei. What is this period of time where you're supposed to add from the Chol and the Kodesh? It can't be when the sun is shining. It can't possibly be when the sun is shining. V'ra'iti l'Rabbeinu Tam b'seifa ha'yashar shelo perush nachon b'sugya ha'hi b'perek b'amem adikim. I saw for Rabbeinu Tam a correct position. Shehu zal piresh de mishetishke ha'chama v'yitmar ha'cha shehu b'en ha'shmashaut ha'inu misof shtiyat ha'chama. From the end of the sunset, klomar misha'a shenishka'a v'arakiyah והיא עדיין כנגד חלונה, ולפני שלא עברה חלונה, ועדיין אינה מהלכת אחורי כיפה, פני הרקיע מאדימים כנגד מקומה של חמה, וזהו כל זמן שפני חמה מאדימים, אתמה בגמרא. אבל תחילת שקיעת החמה, שהיא השעה שהתחילה להיכנס ברקיע, ונסתלקה זריחתה מן הארץ, the beginning of the setting process, when the sun is no longer, when its shining is no longer seen on earth, kodem lezman hazel. Hutzvach Rabbeinu Tam, etc., etc., you can read it in detail. So now Ramban has introduced a new theory. The Ramban's theory is that from the beginning of this process of sunset, in other words, when the sun is no longer visible above the horizon, until Bein Hashmashot, which is, as we said, some 58 and a half minutes, that's the voluntary zone. If you want to add to Yom Kippur or to Shabbat during that period, you may. But it makes no sense whatsoever to add anything prior to it. So now the Ramban has adopted this strange position of Rabbeinu Tam. Okay, now let's pause for a moment. We have the position of the Ibn Ezra and Rabbi Eliezer Mimitz, that the day switches at actual sunset, at astronomical sunset. Therefore, these people lit candles like we do 10, 15, a certain number of minutes, according to Rabbi Eliezer Mimitz, at least 13 and a half minutes before the physical setting of the sun. We light today 15 minutes, 20 minutes, in Yerushalayim 40 minutes, before the physical setting is. You have the position which we attributed to the Gaonim, that is the simple reading of the Gemara, namely that Bein HaShemashot starts with the physical setting of the sun and ends sometime thereafter. People who follow that position also lit candles the way we do today, 15 minutes, 20 minutes before the physical setting of the sun. What did Rabbeinu Tam do? What was his actual practice? What did the Ramban do? What was his actual practice?
How do we know what they actually state, what their actual practice was?
Well, one way we can know is that it's absolutely inconceivable that Rabbeinu Tam should light candles at a different time from Rabbi Eliezer Mimitz. You have a small, it would be an enormous disruption in a community, a small community in northern France or in northern Germany, where you have the student and the teacher, one accepts Shabbat 58 minutes after the other. It's just an impossibility. It's impossible that Rabbeinu Tam would be lighting candles at a time which, according to Rabbi Eliezer Mimitz, would be a Chilul Shabbat Yeraita. He would ask him, if this is what it means, how could you possibly light candles at that time? Secondly, if you follow Rabbeinu Tam's position, when did they make Abdal?
Very late.
When?
An hour after.
How do they know it was an hour after sunset?
Yeah,
nowadays we can say, okay, we are now all work according to a clock. So that you read in the newspaper, when is Hadlakat Neirot, so many minutes, when is Havdalah, so many minutes, you look on your clock, maybe worried your clock might be off a minute or two, but without a clock, how do you know when it's 72 minutes after?
When the clock is going, you have a
By the very faint stars.
What faint stars? The stars are all out long before 72 minutes. And furthermore, if you're... Remember that when the sun is 12 degrees already below the horizon, or even 7 or 8 degrees below the horizon, almost all the stars of second and third in magnitude are visible. So you have thousands of stars visible in the sky. You have a completely starry sky, except that you have some little bit of light of the western horizon, and that light never disappears during the month of June or July, for instance.
Okay, down to the fourth or fifth minute.
Takes to walk 3 or 4 miles.
You send the servant out to walk.
What, are you going to send the servant out to walk 4 miles?
You could have a water clock, and they mentioned it in one of your...
He mentions it as a purely theoretical position, which means that he never had one. He said that if you do this, you'd find out, you might find it was the same amount of time. But
you could have a sand clock.
But they didn't. We have no evidence that people were doing things by sand clocks. And furthermore, if you take Rabbi Natan's position seriously, 72 minutes in Israel at the equinox equals something like 3 hours in Metz or in London at the solstice.
Sun won't set.
I was going to ask you a question. Did Rabbi Natan in fact maintain that they changed with season, or he maintained this as an absolute thing? The sun didn't change its speed going through the firmament.
It's hard for me to know, but if he did maintain that it didn't change its speed, even that, 72 minutes is a very long time, and they had no practical way of telling what that was. I don't believe that they could send out their servant to walk for 4 miles in the dark, in the middle of the night, on Saturday night.
I believe that just as we have yahrzeit candles that last through a certain day, that they could in fact have candles that burn for a certain amount of time. They could have calibrated them.
First of all, they did not have candles. Candles were very expensive. It's not worth the candle meant something. At the time that illumination was very expensive. And in the Middle Ages, illumination was very expensive. Furthermore, we know what their day was. Everybody went to sleep early. The entire Roman day had been shifted back by 3 hours. So all of the problems were, could you daven Maariv on Friday night when the sun was still well above the sky? I say it's impossible, first of all, that Rabbeinu Tam or the Ramban could have, that Rabbi Natan could have kept Shabbat at a different period from Rabbi Eliezer Nimitz. Secondly, the Ibn Ezra traveled all over the place. Rabbi Ibn Ezra met Rabbi Natan, the Ibn Ezra visited London, the Ibn Ezra visited, every single European community was visited by the Ibn Ezra. If he believed that the night begins like Rabbi Eliezer Nimitz, exactly at sunset, and those people were lighting candles 15 to 20 minutes after sunset, he would have raised a fuss. We would have had some record about it in some of the writings of Ibn Ezra. We don't have anything like that. So, on the grounds that it was impossible for them to actually follow this rule without a clock Saturday night, or practically impossible. I mean, you could hire your servant to pace back and forth in the room, but what does a poor man do if he doesn't have a servant, especially if you're living in a small town in which you barely have 10 Jewish families or 10 households altogether? There is no positive evidence, and all of the circumstantial evidence is negative, that anyone at any time around Rabbeinu Tam's time, or any time in the 12th, 13th, or 14th century, followed this position of Rabbeinu Tam, which said that you should light candles, or you may light candles Friday night up to 58 minutes after the setting of the sun. 58 minutes after the setting of the sun, in the springtime in these regions, all the stars of third and fourth magnitudes are out. When the Gemara says that you're not allowed to count the star that's visible in the day, the only stars that are visible in the day are the planets. Only Venus, Mars, Mercury, and Jupiter are occasionally visible before the sun sets. And if you say the day means when it's still legally day, then that meaning, then that phrase has no meaning whatsoever. So it's absolutely impossible to interpret a kochav beinoni to mean a star of fourth or fifth magnitude. And all of the stars of a lower magnitude, that is, the brighter stars, are completely visible by that time. So in short, it is impossible, and we have no evidence whatsoever that Rabbeinu Tam's position was anything other than a theoretical position prior to the 16th century.
Why did the Shulchan Aruch rule that way?
It's a mystery. The reason why the Shulchan Aruch ruled that way is that the Shulchan Aruch was simply summarizing this Ramban. The language is almost identical with the language of the Torah Adam of the Ramban. This particular book of the Ramban, since it dealt with matters of death and Aveilut and so on, is a very popular book. There was no alternative opinion expressed anywhere.
The Ramban.
You could read, the Ramban is pretty clear not that way, but the Ramban just doesn't say. So you could stretch the Ramban or the Rabbeinu Tam's position into the Ramban. It's one of the mysteries why both the Shulchan Aruch and the Lavush essentially just cite the Ramban without a dissenting opinion. Okay? Now, what was actual practice?
So, after the Shulchan Aruch?
After the Shulchan Aruch. Okay?
By the time the Shulchan Aruch, they had a clock.
They had, okay. Let's take a look at my page 53. Okay, this is the Bach. I want to look at the Bayit Chadash at the Bach, okay? He discusses these various positions, and now maybe a quarter of the way down from the top on the right-hand column, Mihu, do we have that? Mihu kvar nahagu ha'am lahakel al pi perush Rabbeinu Tam, v'hagdolim she'eskimu lo perusha. The right hand column in the Bach.
Okay, I found it.
Miu kvar nahagu ha'am lahakel al pi perush Rabbeinu Tam v'hagdolim she'eskimu lo perusha. Aval vaday hamachmir la'atzmo v'hachnasat Shabbat kedat Rabbi Eliezer mitzvah v'olav bracha. V'tzarich lekabel alav Shabbat miyad b'sof sha'at chafei sha'arik. ולדעתו, התחלת בין השמשות הוא בין שעות בקירוב קודם גמר ציית הכוכבים, מלבד תוספת שבת, ולו בעשי מתשבית בשבתכם, etc. etc. ואחי משמע מה שכתוב ואומרים בתורת הוויה, etc. Let's skip a little bit down. Okay. ואחי משמע ממה שכתב מהרבי יהודה, Yisrael Isilis, B'tumat HaDeshen, Simon Aleph, B'bimei HaKadmonim, B'kremz, Hayu Makdimim, B'tfilat HaAvit, V'kriyat Shema, B'erev Shabbat, B'od Hayom Gadol, they used to daven Maariv on Fridays when it was still daylight, Kol Kach, Shehayarav HaIr, Shehaya Mehagdolim HaKadmonim, Hu V'chol Tuvei HaKahal Imo, Halchu L'tayel Achrei Achila Shel Zehudat Shabbat, Al Svat HaNahar Donai. They used to go for a stroll along the Danube after the Sabbath meal Friday night. In other words, they would daven, light candles, daven, make Kiddush, have their meal, and there would still be enough sunlight to allow them to go then, after all of that, for a stroll along the Danube. V'hayu chozvim lebeitehem kodem alayla ad kan l'shonet. V'ein safek shelo ikdimu kol kach zman rav, they could not have been accepting Shabbat so early, Ela lafisha yutopsim da'at Rabbi Eliezer mimitz ikav b'shiur b'in hashmashot v'od tzarich lausif meichol ala kodesh v'chein nireh lafni aniyat da'ati sheda'at Rabbi Eliezer mimitz ikav I believe that Rabbi Eliezer Mimitz's position is the true one. And that's what I saw in my youth. Not only the extra special Jews, just the ordinary householders, שנזהרו לקבל שבת על כל פנים בסוף שחף בייז ויאמרו כי כך קיבלו מאבותם. They would accept the Shabbat more or less as we do today, and because they said that that's what they learned from their fathers. ואין ספק שנהגו כך אבותינו באשכנז על פי הוראת רבי אליעזר מימיץ. There's no doubt that our forefathers in Ashkenaz, before they moved to Poland, followed this position of Rabbi Eliezer Mimitz. ועתה בעוונותינו הרבים נתמעטו אנשי מעשה, בפרט בירידים בלובלין וביארוסלב, especially in the great fairs in Lublin and in Yaroslav, ושאר ירידים כולם מחללים שבת פרהסיה, ומחויבים לבטל החילול השם ולהניד שוטרים ולהניש הסרבנים. So now we have the clue as to what was happening. The Rabbi Yoel Sirkus tells us that in his youth, the ordinary householders also lit candles 15, 20 minutes before the actual setting of the sun. But with the advent of the large fairs, and people were away from their homes traveling to the large fairs, and business was pressing, and with the advent of illumination, so that the fairs were now open considerably after the setting of the sun, and with a printed Shulchan Aruch in their back pockets, because they could now see that it says black and white, that the fact that they were lighting candles that early was simply a voluntary zone, because they were Mosif Me'achol Al HaKodesh, they began to do their work, continue their job at the fair until well after dark, because they were relying on this 58 and a half minute principle.
How has illumination changed during that
day? Whale blubber came in. In other words, the price of illumination dropped, and more than that, the day gradually shifted back to where we have it today. In other words, we tend to eat, you know, supper after sunset, go to sleep 10 or 11 o'clock at night, if not later. Remember, for someone at the time of Rabbeinu Tam, or even for someone at the time of Samuel Pepys, 10 or 11 o'clock is equivalent to 2 or 3 in the morning for us. I mean, you can just read the diaries from that period, and you realize that going out and carousing and staying out to all hours meant until 10 o'clock at night. So,
they got up at sunrise.
Yeah, and they got up at sunrise. Okay. All right. What time is it now? Well, should we have one more session devoted to this? Because this is really startling. What has happened here was that a theoretical position, because it was printed in a text, remember, the advent of printing was a novelty. Just like with the internet today, everybody is an expert on everything, because he can just now express his opinion on the internet and see it confirmed by 1,000 other people on the internet. The novelty in the 16th century was the advent of the printing press. The advent of the printing press, and especially the publication of a work like the Shulchan Aruch, meant that the rabbi was no longer the sole authority. The rabbi the Bach, Rabbi Yoel Sirkus, may have said, look, you should light candles 15 minutes before sunset, but the average businessman who was at this fair pulls up the Shulchan Aruch, and here it says black and white without any dissenting opinion, you can light candles until 58 and a half minutes after. And I don't want to lose this business. And he's away from home, so he's not constrained by his normal practice. There's a whole psychology of how people behave, sociology of how people change their behavior when they are distant from home. So a shift took place in the 16th century, last third of the 16th century, the beginning of the 17th century. Well, first of all, what did it consist of? If these people were going to be consistent, that is, if they were going to light candles 15 or 20 minutes after the setting of the sun because they relied on Rabbeinu Tam, that would mean that they would have to make Havdalah at least 72 minutes after the setting of the sun on Saturday night. Okay? But that's not what they did. They accepted Rabbeinu Tam's position as far as being lenient Friday night was concerned. But when it came to Saturday night, they couldn't possibly wait the full 72 minutes or even an hour and a half or even longer, because if you actually treat Rabbeinu Tam's position in terms of degrees of the sun below the horizon, then it never gets that dark in many of these places during the summer months, and during the even during the spring months it may be as long as 2 or 3 hours. So in fact, what happened was, and we see this very clearly in, should we devote one more session to this? Because we should see what happened. Okay, but let's briefly see, we mentioned this last time, but we can get a picture. I have this tshuva of the Chatam Sofer. So my page 58. So just a short, brief passage will tell us what actual practice was. Here's the problem that the Chatam Sofer dealt with. A boy was born 8:30 at night. Remember, they had clocks. Now we're talking about Mattersdorf in 1803. So this is fully civilized society with clocks. Everybody's living according to the clock. Okay? And therefore he's also living according to a chart. So the behavior at the time of the Chatam Sofer vis-a-vis how to determine time is like ours. Namely, you look in the newspaper, or you look in the luach, or you look at the table that's posted in the bakery or in the shul to find out when is Hablakat Nerot and when is Havdalah, right? Or you look in the New York Times, wherever it's printed, and you follow it, right? We don't go out and look at the stars, and we don't make any individual computations. We just follow what it says in the luach, whichever luach we have, okay? Now, the problem that he was faced with was that a baby boy was born 8:30 at night, Saturday night. So according to Rabbeinu Tam's position, okay, when was this? This was June, whatever I said it was last time, 18th or something like that, in 1803.
So the sun set at 8.
The sun set at 8:03 precisely. The sun set at 8:03, we know that, the U.S. Nautical Almanac. We know when the sun set in Mattersdorf in local time. It was still not train time, so each city had its own local time. The sun set at 8:03. The baby boy was born at 8:30. The Chatam Sofer decides that the Brit Milah is the next Shabbat. In other words, essentially a half an hour after the physical setting of the sun, it's still Shabbat. Okay? So he is following, and this is what he says, he is following Rabbeinu Tam's position. Going to Rabbeinu Tam, okay, but now look at what he says. Ki zman halayla, lefi ha-sha'ot ha-nehugot, hu b'tkufot ha-shana hazot le'et ata, hei minutin kodem gmar kashkash nine ur. Nighttime, tseita kochavim, in other words, is 5 minutes to nine. That's not 72 minutes after 3 minutes past eight. 72 minutes after 3 minutes past eight is 9:15. He's making Havdalah 5 minutes to nine. He's not waiting 72 minutes. Okay? V'haya ze rachok mibein ha-shmashot shehura gibur v'rei shana v'shi omil b'muchla tuchaf beiz minutin k'ma shirich v'chich v'rei v'rut she'en alim tshuva v'chok Yaakov. Okay, so that therefore, he's saying that since you have to wait at most 15 minutes, even if you take the mil to be a bit longer, 3/4 of a mil instead of being 13 and a half minutes is 15 or 16 minutes, you subtract 15 minutes from 8:55 and you get 8:40. This baby was born at 8:30, therefore it's Shabbat. So what's happening? It's Shabbat. It's not even Ben Hashmash. It's Shabbat. And the Brit Milah is the next Shabbat. This is an Isud Yoraita, a Chiyuv Skila. If he gets the wrong day, It's a serious problem. Nevertheless, he decides, okay, so we have the following situation. Indeed, and we can read lots and lots of tshuva from that period, the people were still doing work until 10, 15, 20 minutes after the shkia, if necessary. Legally, a half an hour after the shkia, it's still daytime. Ben HaShemoshot hasn't started. Yet, they didn't wait 72 minutes, according to this position of Rabbeinu Tam, because the Havdalah was 5 minutes of nine. When he says that the Havdalah that night is 5 minutes of nine, that's not his invention. Obviously, he's taking this from somebody's table. I would love to know whose table it was. Probably it was a version of Rabbi Rafael Hanover's table, which was based on an entirely different principle. But in any event, what you have throughout Eastern Europe in this period of 200 and 250 years is Shabbat does not begin until well after the setting of the sun. So the lighting of candles was after sunset. But Havdalah, except in for people who are machmir, the vast majority of the people made Havdalah long before the 72 minutes required. How did that happen? So, and this maintained itself more or less for 200 or so years. In fact, in the Hungarian communities, maybe until this very day, but in most of Eastern Europe, at least until this century, the two strong forces that argued against it was the Vilna Gaon and the first Lubavitcher Rebbe. They both said that this position can't make any sense, and you have to revert to the idea that the Bein HaShemoshot starts with Shkiat HaChada. But their views had almost zero impact on actual behavior for the entire 19th century. Only in the 20th century, and only between the wars, was the shift in Eastern Europe back to where we have it today, due in the main part that because of the major migration to the United States, everybody who hit New York did not follow this position, because the original settlement in New York was from Germany and from the Sephardic communities, and they had no truck. Throughout Western Europe, there was never any following of Rabbeinu Tam's position. Okay, so we will trace this a little bit. I haven't still firmly decided what we will study, but probably we'll give one more shiur on this topic, and then we'll probably discuss Grantor. What you said it was 15 years ago,
I think
was
the last? At least that long, yeah.
Sivat Spartim, when was it? 15 years ago?
Is your mind fixed on that?
No.
Five.
Seven? I got nice. So, Sabatim, in government, see, I'd like to get to something which is only politically controversial, rent control laws, but nothing that's religiously controversial.
When was the Roman day? I thought they had people in the United States.